I'm Will Hedrick.
And I'm Jordan Schaffer.
And this is Dog Ears and Timestamps, a book club podcast. And we're talking about the rest of Reclaimed by Madeline Rue, the second half, chapters 17 through 39 or something like that.
Yeah, 36, 39, something like that.
Mm-hmm. The second half of the book, effectively.
The moral was not what we said, basically. I feel like if we had stopped where we did, it was like, all right, that's what we get. But kind of at the end, it was just...
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what the moral is.
It felt like just don't go out back on a promise and always stick out for your friends is kind of what it felt like, you know, because it was like just the three of us at the end. But yeah, there was almost like a weird family dynamic with Paxton. Like he was so lonely that he was like building this family unit. It was like this beautiful... trophy wife, unfortunately, to say. Like, I hate to say that, but that's pretty much what he was doing. Like, trophy wife, super, super lonely, somebody that nobody would care if she disappeared. Even her fans probably don't even really care that she's... Because she's, like, off the grid, right? Like, they're not hearing about her while she's on this.
At this point, no.
So, and they haven't caused a riot. There's no freezer movement.
Oh, well, we don't know.
Well, yeah, we do. I'm just kidding. Yeah, no, I guess they're not plugged in, so they wouldn't know if there was a freezer movement, but... she believes that there isn't one, you know, like nobody cares that she disappeared. Like that was like the kind of theme behind all three of these people. Like also this cult girl, like nobody would care if they disappeared. So Suri was like the trophy wife. And then what was her name?
Cinna. Yeah, cult girl.
She was like the daughter, but almost like because she had like some weird issues, he was like the stepfather and she was like the daughter. Han was like his son.
Right.
Then he had like this weird... He almost like fetishized her.
Cinna,
yeah. I don't know if fetishized was the
like,
right word.
He was trying to like romance her.
Yeah, and the dynamic that it felt like he was kind of trying to trick everyone into playing, it felt like he wanted that kid to idolize him like he would have had a son. You know, he gave him this fake dog, which is kind of cool.
Right.
But it was just weird. And then he twisted the family dynamic. He was like into the cult girl. And I guess maybe the other one was too powerful. I wonder if he couldn't trick her.
Yeah. I mean, he's clearly all fucked up.
Yeah.
You can argue that he's probably more fucked up than he was before they found the vestige. But I mean, he still was fucked up before that at some point, you know, as well. I mean, he wouldn't be like this crazy if he hadn't been fucked up before the vestige. But then the vestige just like amplified that in his issues. I never caught on to like the family dynamic thing that you thought he was building there.
That might have just been something I was projecting.
I mean, you know, it's not like I catch everything. It just hadn't occurred to me. Like I said, I'm still not entirely sure that I know what the moral of the story is. It just seems sort of like an episode of Star Trek. I feel like it accomplished about as much as a 30-minute block of television.
Yeah.
But took like 300 pages to do so. And something about that is just kind of weird to me. But it was okay. It was better than okay. That's not fair. It was a decent, good book.
Mm-hmm.
A fun story. I was engaged almost the whole time. As it was getting closer to the end, I was less engaged. I was sort of like, okay, like I see what we're doing here. Like,
yeah.
Not terrible, you know, by any stretch. As far as the way that I feel about other sci-fi books that we've read, it's definitely the only one that I feel positively about. Except for, I guess, Seven Eves, but Seven Eves was a different thing altogether. I don't think that sits on the same level.
Yeah, it's one of the ones I feel pretty positive about. I'm trying to think of the other ones we've read. I know it's been, the only two that come to mind are Seven Eves and Lighthouse, whatever that one is.
Oh, Beacon 23.
Yeah, Beacon 23.
And then we read Persephone Station, remember?
Honestly, Persephone Station was sort of the same way I feel about this one. It was like, all right, you know. It's nothing so engaging that's like, I really hope this is a series. Like, right, I hope that this is the new breakthrough series and everyone gets to see it on Netflix. Which is unfortunate because I always want them to be. I always have like a lot of faith in the new authors. And that's why I think it's cool that we're trying so many new books that come out every year, you know?
Yeah.
It's fun supporting new authors. I don't know. I guess maybe the only thing is since we're reading like the same style of book, it's almost getting predictable.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That is really true. But that could also just be not necessarily so much just because we're reading the same style of book, but just because of the times. Trends in storytelling go not just in genre, they go beyond that as well to like the way that things are at any given point in time. So I bet that if we read a young adult fantasy novel from the early 90s, it'd probably feel really different, even though that's like 60% of what we read here.
We did that with The Night Circus, wasn't that one from?
That was...
I don't remember when they wrote that, honestly. I feel like it was early 2000s.
I want to say 2002.
Yeah, there was email was common enough to where the circus was like, email us.
Yeah, at the end. I didn't care for that. I remember thinking that was kind of stupid. Because, it was timeless before that moment.
Mm-hmm.
the story was better served by being timeless.
Kept the magic, you know?
Right. I can imagine that it could last until the point of email. I don't need to be told that, though, you know?
Yeah, before they said email, it made it feel like that was kind of the end of it. But I guess it was trying to make it seem like we were there. Like it had yeah. those moments that we were the person going through the circus. And yeah. it was trying to make it feel current. And I did get that feeling. And email is still something that they would say now. But also they'd say, like, follow us on TikTok and, you know.
But it's also not difficult for me to imagine being a person going to a carnival at some nondescript time. Like, I don't need to know that it's a time that there's email for me to feel like I can buy into that person that we're supposed to be.
Yeah, they didn't need to end it that way. Because the night circus always came to your town. Mm-hmm. So that could have been what it said. Just like, keep an eye out. Yeah. We'll be around, you know.
Something like that.
Yeah, we have these circuses that pop up around here that make me think, like, let's go. But they're definitely not as cool looking.
No, not half.
They have a bunch of games, those rip-off games, and you get a goldfish. Like, oh, throw a ping pong ball in all these teacups, and you'll get a goldfish. Carnivals are not magical and wonderful like they were in that story.
No, not at all.
Made me feel like it was Ren Fair, though, more than a carnival.
Yeah, kind
of. More of a traveling Ren Fair.
Yeah.
Because you watch these acts perform.
More of a troop.
And, yeah, troopers.
Of sorts. Like the Edema Roo.
Yes, dude. That's what I was thinking. And I'm glad you said it.
Yeah, that's how much happened in this book. We're talking about every other book.
Every other book.
I don't care about any of the characters still, which is odd. And I feel like that's happening more and more frequently with the books that we read lately for some reason. I just, like, can't care about characters anymore. I don't know what's happening to me.
Yeah, even with The Name of the Wind, you didn't care about the characters. Or at least the main character. You might have cared about some
of
the side characters.
I like some of them. Like, you know, we talked about multiple times, Ori is the best character. Mm-hmm. Just period. But I like his friends, Willem and Simon. I mean, I like them as side characters, but I know that they're just side characters. Mm-hmm. All the side characters are obviously just side characters, and I like them well enough, but yeah, I don't like both. I don't like Denna.
That whole thing is toxic.
Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah, and then I didn't care about these characters. What did we read just before this? I've already gone and forgot Animal Farm. Those aren't characters that one does care about. I mean, I guess I cared about Boxer, but that's just because, I don't know, you have to, right?
Yeah, I mean, I liked a few of them. The donkey, forgot his name. He was all right, though. What else have we read recently?
Before Animal Farm, we read Red Seas.
Yeah.
Obviously, I care about Locke and Jean, but no other characters in that book are going to matter again, except for maybe Drakasha, but... Mm-hmm. And I guess I kind of care about her. But it feels like every other person in that book was disposable, except for Locke and Jean.
Yeah.
Kind of weird. Like, none of the side characters were really... I mean, they were fun for the moment, but we immediately killed Jean's girlfriend. And
and then it was Lord of the Rings, which...
Tired of characters.
Which you were inclined to already like those guys.
Yeah. I mean, those people are already, you know, in my essence or whatever, so...
Yeah, you're not even liking anime anymore. You're like, I don't watch anime anymore. I'm over it.
I just have no time or energy for anything anymore. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. And now I've let myself get so far behind that I just look at that hill and I think, fuck, I'm not ready to climb that right now. It's 3-day weekend. Maybe I'll start trying to get caught up this weekend.
You heard it here first, guys. Will is over anime.
I never thought it would happen.
He doesn't care anymore. He doesn't even like My Hero Academia. He doesn't like me bringing up that I want to report on it because he doesn't want to watch it. Because he doesn't care. Because it's bad, he says. I'm just kidding. I said a lot of stuff for
you
there.
The last I saw of My Hero Academia, Boku no Hero Academia, was bad. It was bad and very disappointing. That's not why I stopped. I stopped because I got all fucked up with the move. Mm-hmm. And I guess the new job as well, because I held on to my previous job. So I just ran out of time. I just don't have time for anything anymore. I was losing all my energy. It's about time I started like catching back up on that stuff.
It's kind of weird. I almost feel like I was able to get in Paxton's perspective in this book more than the rest of them. Mm-hmm. Because I was breaking down that family element that I thought he was building.
Yeah.
So did I care about him the most? Even though he's the bad guy?
You definitely put more effort into understanding him than the rest, sounds like.
And then they just flee. And like the dog, it's hard not to care about a dog, even if it's a robot dog.
Right. Yeah.
It's just like, oh, now this one just pass it down.
Yeah. It was kind of a weird book. It just felt like an episode of Star Trek. I said that already, I guess, but I don't really have any other way to describe it.
Like, this is the first episode of Star Trek. It shows you how the three get together and they get a dog. And then it's, and then it's them solving mysteries across space. They're Scooby-Doo now. Yeah. Scooby-Doo in space.
There's a reference to Scooby-Doo in this book. Paxton calls to them as like the Scooby-Doo gang as he's sitting there in the Lang room about to get devoured by Lang. He's like, if it wasn't for the fucking Scooby-Doo gang over there,
I would have gotten away with it too. If it wasn't for you dang kids.
Right. It's like the most direct reference of all time.
I hate to say it, but this is not one that I even like think I'm going to revisit.
Oh, there's no reason to. We gathered everything we can from it at this point.
Yeah, the only concepts I'm going to rethink about are the Neuralink stuff was kind of fun. It definitely makes sense that there's like the butterfly effect when you mess with your memories, which was an interesting concept that I'd never considered. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that was the concept they were going off of for the whole book and for that to not be a bigger element.
Yeah, it ends up not mattering really in any way.
We kind of should have just followed the cult girl. She should have been the experiment project, and it should have been like a thriller style of her. I'm telling this author to rewrite it into a... God, what was that Leonardo DiCaprio movie that was not Inception, but the one on the island?
Shutter Island?
Thank you. That sounds so stupid. The one on the island. Like, you couldn't remember that? Yeah, Shutter Island. That one, it was just like a mega super ultimate twist.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like that's what they should have gone for. If they were trying to play the angle of the memory.
Like way more thriller and less kind of whatever this was.
Yeah, this was, it just felt like it was a guy. It's kind of like
popcorn summer action movie.
Yeah, a guy just trying to take advantage of some people that nobody cared about. And then they found each other and that's how they related, is that they were all misfits in the same way.
Right, yeah.
They're like, nobody cares about us, so we'll care about each other. Like, all right.
Yeah, it was really weird to have the whole memories angle. And then at the end, it was just like, no, this is just some alien force that we can't comprehend. Some sort of metaphysical thing that is the sole production of a black hole.
Yeah.
Is conscious in some way because it's devoured civilizations and stuff. And so feeds on taking more from people. But so if the villain is a thing that we can't comprehend, how does that matter? Because we can't learn anything from something we can't comprehend, certainly not in so short a period of time. And it's the main villain because Paxton doesn't matter kind of like 2/3 through the book. Whenever the inmates are starting to kind of realize where they are and what's happening and figuring out how to fight back and stuff, even if they're not ready to fully fight back yet. And so you kind of already know that, okay, well, Paxton's not the thing. It's whatever this alien thing is. Paxton's just the vehicle for the alien to cause the problem. But the alien doesn't matter because Efren, it's just kind of unnecessarily convoluted, but really not that difficult to follow. It's just too many elements. It's like a really big puzzle.
Yeah, they struck gold and they were like, let's dig somewhere else. Like, this is cool, but let's bring it up. Like, we found this. Right. We get credit, but like, it's let's like, also what dig they call over here.
Burying the lead, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to get away from the more exciting idea.
I guess, I mean, that's such a hard idea to write, I guess, that I was throwing out there compared
it's
to what.
It's also been done before. You know, like, I made the Eternal Sunshine reference last week. Probably other movies that play on memories that I'm not immediately aware of that deal with it. It's nothing terribly new, but it's also nothing terribly dated. Like, you can do it again.
Yeah. Really felt like it was going to play on that memory angle. And the only thing that it did, you could just tell that Paxton was manipulating them. That's like why he was messing with their memories. Because it was like,
just the conflict.
Then I guess it was the vehicle for the alien to be there. But then, like you said, it didn't even matter.
Yeah, it didn't matter at all.
So it's like, why did we do that for more book? So it's a to-be-continued episode in Star Trek, like how we
right,
did
it. It would be one of those vaguely to-be-continued episodes, yeah. The reviews wouldn't come back terribly positive, so they would never revisit it.
Mm-hmm. The scathing review by Dog Ears and Timestamp.
You know, finishing it last night, I was thinking, you know what? It was so-so. It was whatever. It was fine. But kind of the more that I thought about it today and thinking about how nothing that happened mattered.
Yeah.
At all. It didn't seem like anything that happened led towards another thing happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just kind of boring. The more that I think about it, it just doesn't make any sense to do something that way.
Yeah. Remember when like vampires were hot, like in all
were
of the,
hot?
They're still hot. Everybody still wants vampire stuff probably, right?
Yeah, they should.
Well,
I do.
Remember when everyone was getting it? They were getting all the vampire stuff?
Yeah.
That movie Daybreaker.
Oh, with Ethan Hawke?
Yeah.
I think we've talked about this before.
It had this concept that I've always thought was awesome, but the way it was like executed in that movie, it left a lot to be desired. I remember not liking it the first time I watched it, and then like the second time watching it, thinking like, not good. And then watching it again later, I was like, not bad. And then now I'm like, this is a good movie. But the idea of like the vampires just taking over, like they accidentally... Yeah. Easter Islanded themselves or whatever, like they ran out of resources and they're running out of humans. It was like, that was a fun idea. And then it had like this, the mutant vampires, which are the ones that would either like be so hungry they'd feed on themselves or on another vampire, both of which did the same thing. But if you'd fed on your own blood, you accelerated the process of becoming a mutant twice as quickly. I don't know. Like all those concepts were really cool for the movie. And then just to have it end up being like, we're turning all the vampires back into humans. I don't know. It was just such a boring concept.
I couldn't even remember what it was.
Yeah, there was. I just
until
felt like
you described it.
There was so much potential, and it was going to be fun. We were going to be following around these like last groups of like rogue humans because the vampires needed to collect them. Or it was going to be like a city of vampires, and we're going to live in the city, and we're going to like, I don't know, see what people were dealing with. Like, I'm really asking a lot because I can't come up with an idea better than what they did. Like, what else are you going to do when you have vampires running out of food that you're going to have to cure the vampirism or whatever? Like, that's pretty much the only thing you can do.
Yeah.
Or you find another way for them to feed. Both of those ideas are kind of boring. So it's like, or the world collapses on itself. Mm-hmm. It's like,
you know what the vampires did in Underworld? They created synthetic blood.
Blech.
Yeah. That's like the opening scene of the first film.
In True Blood, they did that. That was why the vampires came out of the coffin, as they say.
Oh, yeah.
That was the term. On HBO, they were running these commercials like, vampires are real. They just came out of the coffin. Like, talking to president, and I think they had like Obama
right,
or something.
Like normalized in that show. I've never watched it.
And places started serving a drink called True Blood for vampires because they were out, you know? And so if you were a nighttime establishment and a vampire
stopped by. You have to like show
dying,
your license to buy True Blood in the same way that you have to show your license to buy alcohol?
No.
Or do they just let humans buy human blood or synthetic human blood?
Yeah, they let you do that. Yeah.
I feel like that's an ethical concern because cannibalism is illegal.
Is it?
Yeah.
I feel 100%. Like it would be. I feel like it would be, right?
Yeah. You can't buy blood to drink today.
Is it? Remember that guy recently that like cooked his leg in a fajitas or something for his friends?
What?
You don't remember that news story?
No.
Ah, yeah. There was a news story about this guy that like had part of it had like his leg amputated for some reason. And he asked the doctor if he could have it. And then he was like, sure. And he gave it to him. And then he cooked it up.
The doctor should not have let him have it.
Well, he might not have told him what he was going to do. But he ended up having a party with his friends that he had talked to them about this apparently before. Yeah. Maybe he texted a group chat and was like, yo, guys, what do you think? Like, if you had
to be fair, if you did that, I would say, yes, I would be into it.
Yeah, like if I was like, yo, I just got ethically sourced human meat. You want to try some?
Right, yeah.
He'd be like, maybe. And be like, it's my leg. It's the good part. Don't worry. But it was mine.
The meaty calf.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would.
Yeah. I mean, that was the story. And that's what
he
did.
That's crazy, though.
And he invited 11 of his buddies over that said they would. And,
I would
and like
never
10 of them
think
followed
to
through.
Do that.
Yeah. So
there's too many ways for that to go wrong. And obviously we know about it. So it did. Because that's so illegal.
But like, I don't know if it is. You just can't like kill somebody, right? And I know this guy. I know this
guy. No, cannibalism is illegal because it's dangerous, not just from like a sourcing standpoint, but from like a chemical standpoint.
What if it's only illegal because of how you have to source the meat? Is cannibalism legal?
Let me turn on my VPN right quick.
Yeah. Right now, we'll take a break and you can hear from our sponsors.
This is Will Hedrick reporting in live from the other side of the table to tell you that it is not expressly illegal to eat human flesh in the United States.
What?
The problem is the sourcing. Like exactly like you said, I was entirely wrong. It's that there's almost no way to source it legally unless you take it from yourself in some way. Because you can't murder anybody, obviously, even if they agree to it. You can't purchase body parts in almost any fashion in the United States, although the laws apparently are pretty lax in the realm of like educational purposes. And it's also very expensive. Even if you did it illegally through the black market trade, body pieces are expensive. You wouldn't normally pay that much for a steak. And so it's not illegal to eat human meat in the United States. I was so certain that it was.
I keep trying to think of a way, like, oh, hey, I found this guy. Let's try and identify him. And then you're like, is that what you would, like, you can't just, you just have to, you'd have to find a dead guy that was fresh. And
well, there's also, there's laws against desecration of corpses.
I guess you can't even desecrate a corpse.
Yeah.
You can't, I said that all sad.
can't even desecrate a corpse anymore.
Yeah.
God. Talk about cancel culture.
Yeah, times have really changed in America. Man, yeah, so I'd have to just be losing my own limb.
Yeah. That article that I was reading about it, that was the end of the story, was that story that you were talking about, that dude had his foot amputated after a motorcycle accident. Surgeon let him keep it, invited his buds over. They made tacos. Their assessment was that it was pretty beefy.
That's hot. It's beefy. He's a stud, dude. I'm just kidding. Changing the word. That's so...
Why are we talking about cannibalism?
It was relevant when we brought it up.
I don't feel like going back to listen.
Yeah, maybe it'll come to us. Yeah. I mean, maybe it's the issue of reading, like, non-series.
Yeah.
And maybe we need to find, like, an acclaimed series. Like, maybe you'll really be invested in Dune and you'll like the characters in Dune.
Yeah.
Paul is pretty cool. The main guy. Paul Atreides, I think.
His name is just Paul?
Yeah.
Like Paul McCartney?
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably, actually. It was written a while ago.
Yeah.
It's Paul.
Just, such a boring name.
I think it was Paul.
Just such a boring name for an epic space saga.
Yeah, Paul Atreides. What do you want, Will? Xanforth Nomothglian?
Sure.
That's a mouthful.
Paul is a funny name because it makes me think of a Family Guy episode where they had one of the dumb jokes, right? Because they used Adam West all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Actor famous for several things, like being Batman at some point in an excessively goofy and ridiculous TV show, and also being extremely homophobic, I think it has recently come out. But the Adam West character in Family Guy has a crossbow that shoots cats, and then he goes to collect the cats and puts them back in these bags of cats that he has to shoot the crossbow with.
Oh.
And he picks up one, he's like, come here, John, or, you know, like, come here, Sprinkles, come here, you know, kittens, and he, come here, Paul, and he holds up Paul, and he says, Paul, that's a person's name.
Yeah.
Paul. And I always thought that was really funny. The delivery on that joke is really good. I've obviously ruined it.
I was literally thinking a cat named Paul also. That's a funny animal name. And then that must be why, because that scene is embedded. That's like season 2 or 3 of Family Guy. I had those on DVD box set.
Nice.
So I watched them a lot. Family Guy. Dude, I just bought an external CD drive so that I could burn some CDs for my car.
That's right. I remember you talking about that.
Dude, guess how much it was?
$35.
Not even, but good guess, 22 something something.
Nice.
Yeah, it was cheap and it said it burned. And I was like, yes, gonna burn me some CDRs from my car. It's 2003 again, baby.
Right. 2003, we weren't driving.
That's what year my car is. So we were burning CDs for our CD players.
That is true. I did have a CD player. I was burning CDs.
So. Yeah. Your messenger bag. This is the exact like age range that I think we've like kind of fallen in love with. I don't know if maybe everyone likes this kind of young adult genre.
Stuff, yeah. They absolutely don't.
It seems to be like my favorite. I don't know. When I get into...
Yeah, I love it.
When I get into like really hardcore fantasy, was that what the name of the wind was?
While, you know, maybe
because it was so intricate and it's blah, 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 blah. Childish
like a young adult.
Yeah.
Not in the implementation, but in the attitude that it puts across.
Right. I understand. I guess that's probably what kept it charming to me. It was like a complicated fantasy world, but it was still charming. Kind of like Dragon Ball. It's like a silly show with a bunch of fun fight scenes.
Right. Right.
But it was so it's still engaging.
The Kingkiller Chronicles is great.
Mm-hmm.
I was saying that the whole time, just everything around what was happening was so good, but what was happening just seemed like...
Yeah, better for a video game.
Yeah. But yeah, being in the young adult category for so long at this point, we probably should think about branching out a little bit more again.
Yeah.
But it's just easy, you know?
Yeah.
It's always fun. It's always a good time, even if it ends up not being the best.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even that long ago that we read something that we really liked, you know, Into the Heartless Wood. That book was really fun.
That was cool.
And then, you know, Red Seas and Red Skies is kind of a young adult-ish. It's like older young adult-ish. It's like, I don't know. What would that be like?
It's like dancing in between the line,
you know?
Well, it's like dancing the line. It's attacking some more adult issues while still being in the vein of the young adult.
Right.
Yeah. YA/MA. No. TV MA on Nickelodeon, though. So it's like they know teens are watching it, but still right. TV MA Nickelodeon.
It's like, it's not Nick at Night, but the Nickelodeon that plays Are You Afraid of the Dark and stuff.
Ooh.
Teen Nick.
Nice. Nick.
That's
Nick.
What they called it.
Copyright. We're gonna get canceled. We gotta quit talking about Nick. Because the things that I always go back to wanting are a story with a character that has a lot of growth. So like, like Harry Potter is the example I keep thinking of, just because it's like a kid that goes to school and it's a school that's really fun. You know, it's a fun magic school. We literally just watched the 20-year anniversary of the first movie in theaters again because it's so much fun. Like, it didn't matter how dated the movie was, and it didn't matter.
But I wore last Friday when we watched it.
Nice callback. It didn't even matter that they were probably just playing the DVD, you know, and then using their projector.
I'm pretty sure they were just playing the DVD.
Yeah, they weren't like pulling out an old film projection of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone and playing it like it was theaters again. Like, that would have been freaking lit, which is kind of what I thought we were doing. But like, the DVD is probably still better, even, and they just use their own digital projector. How often do you think they're getting film now in the projection rooms?
It depends.
Yeah.
Like the last Tarantino movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Well, no, maybe not Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but the one before that, Hateful Eight, he went and did a 70mm road show where he just toured the movie across the country, showing it on 70mm film. And it was like a big deal or whatever.
Yeah, because you just don't film that way anymore, right? It's just you film 1080p.
Well, it was like ultra wide film. It's like people still use film here and there, but it's mostly like your Tarantinos and your Christopher Nolans, you know, people that really give a shit, you know, to the point of being assholes and being like, no, we need to use film, you know, giving too much of a shit almost. And that's why they're so good. But so it happens, but you don't usually shoot on 70mm. It's very large film, but it isn't terribly common to use film anymore. No, most of the time it is just digital.
Yeah, it would have been cool. Do you think Harry Potter was on film?
I couldn't say.
It had a lot of CGI in it, right?
Yeah,
it and did. A lot of real animals too. You can do CGI in film.
Well, yeah, you just do it in post. You just scan the film in.
Didn't think of that. Nice. That's cool. And it's definitely not just like on reels. They don't have guys flipping reels back there anymore. It's just a film that's probably long on a track that you can't even see anymore. It's not like a single film and like some guys back there swapping them.
I mean, I couldn't say. Got to be better than like 1930s like idea of...
A film. Yeah. Where it's like...
Right. Yeah. It's all that sort of stuff. Yeah. It's definitely progressed beyond that by an extreme amount, you know. Like in a way that they would never have been able to fathom.
Well, just that we were watching Harry Potter, it's so fun because it's this world, like I said, where these kids are growing and learning a bunch of fun, new, interesting things in a cool place. And that's probably why The Name of the Wind or The Kingkiller Chronicles, it was a new world and a fun place to learn things. And K'voth was the vessel for learning things, and he learned things like a sponge, you know?
Right.
And so that was fun. The Lord of the Rings, that was cool. Like every little step we took, they taught us about the world, and like we were growing and learning. And it makes it so that every time you would reread that book, there's more value to it. It probably makes more fun to read every time, you know?
The world of the Lord of the Rings is far better than the majority of the characters. I think the only characters that probably stand toe-to-toe with the world building are Aragorn and Frodo and Sam.
It's a very realistic idea of characters in a universe, though. They're not so fantastical that everyone has left an impact. Like, we were talking about Treebeard and the Ents and things, and after we talked about it, it's like that's all their history. You're right. The world is fun, but we get a lot of fun, tasty pieces of it. And I guess the only interesting people that have enough information to actually be like juicy, you know, are Aragorn, which is kind of cool. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being rude about the Lord of the Rings. I'm picking on the Lord of the Rings. Take that, Tolkien.
Yeah, take that one, Tolkien, and never work in this town again.
Not while I'm around. The town's not big enough for the both of us. I'm sad. I'm not actually sad, but it's like, it's a testament to how I was not super engaged at the end of this book. Yeah. Like, you're right. After we knew where it was going, it was like, all right, well, they're just going to escape.
Yeah.
Happily ever after.
Like, we're there.
Yeah. And when we were
it's
ready.
It's the worst kind of spoiler. You figure it out for yourself and then you don't care how it happens.
It would have been fine if it was the one that we had guessed midway. If they had like kind of danced around the things that we had guessed midway and made it play out elegantly. Instead, it was just like, well, none of that mattered. This is the end. And everybody gets away. Friendship.
Right. And they totally glossed over how Han reconciles with mm-hmm. Senna.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was her cult that she survived that murdered his mom.
Yeah.
They all got their memories back. We know that they did. Well, I'm sorry. For transparency's sake, you didn't finish the book. That's how little you cared.
Yeah, I was close.
That's totally
fair. I had 45 minutes left. I was close. I thought I had the perfect timing before I got to you. But
they all get their memories back. Mm. They figure out a way to do it. Efren, the weird shadow man that's been mm-hmm. popping up here and there, he's like part of the vestige, or the vestige has like been split into two consciousness, and he's like the good side of it, and Lang is like the bad side of it, whatever. So Efren's like, but I can give you your memories back because I am still Lang at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gives all their memories back because they all realize they want them back. But we don't see at all how Han reconciles with Senna. They just get on the ship. We see Paxton get swallowed up by Lang. And then we get the epilogue where the three of them meet on the station to go look at trees because Han wanted to go see real trees because he really liked the trees in the dome.
So are they hanging out?
Yeah, they're like buds. Okay. And they've been hanging out.
It wasn't like a reunion.
No, yeah, they've like been hanging out. It's mostly from Zuri's perspective, the epilogue. And Zuri talks about how she's been trying to get Senna to be a little bit more fashionable, but Senna just mm-hmm. doesn't give a shit or whatever. And so y'all have like all three like been hanging out. So y'all are like suddenly friends, but just because like you survived, you know, a life-threatening accident, you're like now like best friends, even though two of you still have like some serious beef to kind of work through.
Yeah.
Where someone's mother was killed.
And they're all just living off of the famous girl's wealth. Because she can afford everything.
Possibly at this point. Who knows? They don't talk about that at all, but you know, maybe, right?
Well, yeah, they all live happily ever after.
But it's weird. The epilogue feels entirely unnecessary because it doesn't provide anything that makes sense. Just to further talk about how nothing kind of mattered in the book. It all mattered so little. Even the reasons that one of the main characters is there, his trauma, matters so little
mm-hmm.
that we don't have to see him reconcile it with one of the other main characters who's intrinsic to his trauma.
Yeah, the trauma, which is, like you said, the only reason he was even in the book.
Yeah. Is so like, bizarre.
He's like, oh, I worked through that. Or he's like, I'm a man. I just pushed that shit down and I'm gonna worry about that later. I'm just kidding.
I was doing that by the time I was 15. It gets instilled in you pretty quick.
Yeah.
Like, shut up and don't cry. You're a boy.
Just deal.
Yeah. So it's so bizarre. I had thought about it whenever I read that and I thought, that is so bizarre. But I didn't really flesh it out until just now when I was talking about it. It's just so weird. The more that we talk about it, the more I realize that it's really not that good.
It did have a few fun concepts I really liked. And
it had my attention almost the whole time. For mm-hmm. whatever reason, I was engaged almost the whole time.
Yeah.
And then I didn't even realize that it was not so great or not, you know, not even like necessarily good like I was thinking until we started talking about it. So they had something going.
They tricked us with the girls with issues. We felt bad for them. We're just like, I have to keep knowing. Right. No, I'm just kidding. Makes me sound awful. Like, as a dude, just like, I'm super sexist. All girls are just, no. I'm not, guys, please. I mean, y'all, I didn't mean to gender. Digging a hole.
Yeah, not going well.
Just breach the surface. I'm back. Well, I mean, I'm not going to write this author out. I'm not going to pounce on the next book like we did with Jonah, but
right. You know, as much as we've been dogging it over the last 10 minutes or so, 20 minutes or so, it's still not even like the most annoying or bad book that we've read for this show.
Oh no. The only redeeming quality in Beacon 23 was like the space cat dog.
Yeah.
Cause it was like, oh, animal. That's cute.
Yeah. It was just funny.
Yeah. And then it's like, oh, it dies. The chick dies.
Yeah.
He's alone. It's like the book is just like.
It also made so many like contradicting like political statements. Oh my God. Yeah. It was just awful.
It's our house on Mango Street, basically, for the podcast.
Yeah, for the podcast. Because the house on Mango Street is our house on Mango Street.
That's what we should do. We should just have a worst books ever reblast.
Yeah, just revisit and see if maybe we were just wrong.
Just force it through.
Because I hate that book, but I haven't read it since then. So maybe it's better than I remember.
That's the only one I can think of disliking the whole time.
Yeah. Like, I like to talk shit about stuff and I like to criticize things because I like to think and talk about shit. But I don't like to hate things. But I hate House on Mango Street.
It's like patronizing, I feel like.
I don't even remember exactly how I felt about like why I just know as like a part of me that I hated that book.
Yeah. I remember that reading all of it too. I didn't like,
I don't even remember what happens.
Me neither. I don't remember skipping over a page.
There might be a reason that it's so celebrated and we just couldn't grasp it at the time.
Yeah, Mrs. Manjaris was pretty cool and she loved it. It was like her favorite book. She was like, Sandra Cisneros is my spirit animal. Before that was a thing.
She's so funny. Yeah, I mean, we ought to just start like try to revisit like weird things like that and see if maybe we were totally wrong, because I have been wrong before. So,
what books from our youth would you want to revisit, like Pride and Prejudice?
I never had to read that one.
Okay, what about The Great Gatsby?
We read Gatsby at some point. I remember very little about it.
I remember really not liking it.
It was boring.
That was why.
I remember it being boring, but it was also a group read, which looking back on seems so odd for like eighth grade. It was either seventh or eighth grade, or maybe it was even freshman year. I don't know. Whatever.
I think we read it sophomore year.
It just seemed like a weird thing to like do like the read around the room thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not like a simple book. It's complicated. There's a lot of shit happening in there. There's a lot of concepts and ideas.
Yeah, it's not keeping the same train of thought. And when you're just passing it
around the room, like, nobody gives a shit.
Yeah.
And so I sometimes wonder maybe that affected the way that I felt about that book. I liked 1984 because we didn't do the group read thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just read it, like, in the first week. Nobody else finished it. And Golden was like, okay, we're not going to do anything about the book because y'all didn't read it.
Mm-hmm.
But Will gets extra credit.
Nice. There you go. You remember Miss Frost? I think that was her name.
Yeah, that was when you, Sean, and I had a class together, Frost, and that was when we started drawing all those comics.
One thing that has resonated with me from her class
nostalgia.
Throughout all this time.
The nostalgia.
Yeah, the comic book era also. I remember her always having one person read a poem and then having another person read a poem.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was her, right?
Yeah.
That was where I feel it, because I remember reading one and like you read one. I feel like we did one once, and I was like, and she always had two people read it because everybody reads different.
Yeah.
And just the flow, she was like, it gives you a different vibe. And sometimes it resonates better with certain people. And it's no offense to anybody. It's just like, let's do it. Because it must have been something one of her teachers did. And it's just, that's always hit me.
That's cool that stuck with you, because I don't remember that at all. But I was such a little piece of shit back then. And I didn't care about anything. I didn't pay attention to anything.
I remember one time I said both, and you were like, both. I was like, huh? Because I was reading out loud and I mispronounced both. I said both.
What a shithead thing for me to do while you were helping. Reading out loud.
You were helping. You were like, both, dude. You were trying to be like, dude, it's both. I was like, oh.
I should have just shut up.
Are you trying to help? It's That's like funny. If I was like, Colonel. Colonel Sanders.
Yeah.
We did a lot of poetry in that year, now that I'm thinking about it. That was like our introduction to poetry. We also
that was
did,
the first time that I remember like thinking about it.
Dorian Gray was introduced to us that year.
Oh, yeah.
I remember we watched the movie. I don't know if we read the book, but I remember watching the movie and being like, what the heck? It was so it was, cool. Like,
broke your mind.
Yeah, because I didn't even know the story. So when I was seeing it, I was like, this dude just like put his soul in a painting and now he's invincible. What? And then he's also super rich, so he didn't have to worry about anything.
Yeah, he was living the fucking dream.
Dude, here's another thing that's resonated with me from that class. He was smoking a cigarette and drinking wine. And I remember he inhaled the cigarette, exhaled it into his wine glass, and then he like took a sip. I don't know why I thought that was so cool. He was just like playing with the smoke, dude, though.
That is sexy as fuck.
Yeah, that was probably what it was.
If like some hot villain chick in a movie did that, I would immediately be on her side.
Be like, can I have some of that wine?
She could be murdering. She could be Cruella. If Emma Stone as Cruella De Vil was murdering puppies, but doing that, I would be on board with it.
Pulling from her long cigarette.
Yes.
Those are cool.
100%. I would be on board with anything she was doing in that moment.
Willoughby. On board. Will on board.
Okay. I didn't even think about acronym. Wow.
My bad.
You just fucking Dorian Grayed my mind.
I skipped a chapter. I was on a different book. I don't know what happened there.
Was my seventh grade Dorian Gray moment for Jordan.
That was you seeing your own portrait back. You're like, oh.
No, that's just me every morning as I look in the mirror. Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, What are we reading next week, Will?
We're sticking in the young adult theme after
all that discussion about shit. Yeah, because it's like, what am I going to do, Stephen King? Like, that was my other thought. It was like, do I just suggest Stephen King again? It's like, not all of his books are bangers, I bet.
No, absolutely not.
I bet probably half of them are good, and the other half are like, well, it was, I mean, it's how we feel about
this
book.
It would be interesting to look at the lesser known ones.
Mm-hmm.
Or certainly, like, he does not remember writing Cujo, right? But people love Cujo. So, but it would be interesting to read Cujo and try to see if it's actually, like, good, or if it's one of those cult classic things. Like, The Big Lebowski is a decent enough movie, but people love it because it's unique.
Mm-hmm. American Psycho.
Maybe Cujo's that way. Yeah, American Psycho is not.
Did you read that book?
Terribly good movie. I've only seen the movie.
Well, the book is really weird. It feels like you're in the brain of a psychopath because he's like.
That's probably better then, because the movie doesn't feel like you're in the brain of a psychopath.
It was pretty cool, actually. Like, you know how? Well, you know how Jason Bateman? No, what was his name?
Patrick Bateman.
Patrick Paxton.
Paxton Bateman.
So Pax. He's remember when he was like going over his daily routine in the bathroom, like,
yeah,
his,
like the opening scene of the movie.
That was how he thought about everything.
Yeah.
He classified everything down to like you're wearing a mismatched blah blah blah, or like a full suit of this one thing is really.
There's the scene with the business cards and all of that. You know,
that was a long section of the book.
I mean, it was a long section of the movie. That's like I just watched that scene again the other day for some reason, but I don't know, because I'm a fucking weirdo. And that's like a 7-minute scene or something like that.
It was I feel like it was a couple pages. It might not have been, but I remember reading about it. Like, why does this matter? Like, all this stuff mattered because he was a lunatic.
Because that's who he is. Yeah. The book is about who he is as a lunatic. Yeah.
So, or maybe a psychopath. I'm using those words frivolously. I don't know what they mean. So sorry about that.
Yeah. Having not read the book, I don't know what he's actually painted as. I mean, it's titled American Psycho, right? So he's supposed to be a psychopath, but it's very possible that by like literal definitions, he might be a little bit closer to something else. Sociopath might be more close to it, but
it's interesting.
What do I actually know? I'm not fucking Dr. House.
The book seems to even kind of fall apart at the end too, because it's well, like the movie.
What happens in the movie is that he sort of realizes he's gaining like some self-awareness that he thought he had murdered this person, but didn't. And so is he actually a psychopath, or is he somebody that fantasizes about being a psychopath?
Yeah.
And so it tries to adopt all the behaviors of somebody. And maybe that's why we don't know exactly what his issue is. Is he a psychopath or a sociopath or any other sorts of, you know, mental extracurriculars? Is because he's not actually those things. He just wants to be those things. And even as somebody that wants to be those things, doesn't know enough to actually accurately represent one of those things.
That's sort of
what the movie's about.
Yeah, dude, Wall Street, baby.
Right, yeah.
Okay, so what are we reading?
Yeah, back to that. We're going to read Six Crimson Cranes. It's the first in, apparently, a new series. This book came out back in June, I think I was reading. July 6th. Jordan had this on a recommended list somewhere and brought it up, and I read the first paragraph of the synopsis on Goodreads, and I thought, that is exactly what I want. I'm going to buy this whether or not we do read it for the show.
Yeah, dude, that's the Amazon algorithm at its finest.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was? The Amazon gave it to you?
Yeah, it popped up as suggested books, like, based on your reads, and you could tell they were kind of based on my reads, because it was two that felt very like the podcast, and then two that were like, oh, is that what you do in your spare time? It was all like, one was like psychic defense. It was the psychic defense handbook. And the other one was the Constitution. The United States Constitution. I'm so lame, dude. Oh, man.
You're
that's me, though.
A very well-rounded person.
Yeah, dude, part the kimono, and that's what you get. The Constitution.
Nice.
And I already forgot the other thing. The Constitution.
And psychic defense.
The defense for your psychic abilities, you know, and it was also at the end, it was paranormal. It helped you fight the paranormal stuff in your house, demons.
Yeah.
And then this book and, another one that was just, it was another in this vein of young fantasy, but it was like much more revenge oriented. It was felt kind of evil. It's like, oh, what happened?
A little darker.
Yeah. It was like, what was I searching that week? It was like, oh, super emo or something.
Right. So we're going to take one of those. I'm super excited about it. Yeah. Everything about it is like screaming what I'm into. Vaguely Asian themed, a young adult fantasy series. It has the word crane in mm-hmm. the title. I love a good crane.
That was the hook, line, and sinker right there.
Yeah.
Crane.
That's all I need, cranes.
Yeah.
So we're going to read that. We're going to cut this in 2 weeks. My math had been wrong in the previous couple of weeks when I was talking about our plans to get to Dune. We didn't need 5 weeks. We needed 4 weeks. So here's another 2 week book that we're going to do. A little bit more than the previous one. It's going to be closer to 225 pages a week by the Kindle version that I bought. So an extra, what is that, like 75 pages to what we've been doing this past book. So we're going to read chapter 22. Which happens to be on page 229 on the Kindle version. And I just thought it was funny to say to chapter 22, which is page 229. And we're going to end there. So 221. And then we'll finish the second half the next week. Be looking forward to Dune. That is what is next. 4 weeks of the book, and then the movie will come out the following Monday.
Yeah, dude, I cannot wait. That's going to be so much fun. If we can, if it's not too late, we should try and record the podcast, but who knows what's going on, because probably I'll be in the middle of working my new job, and you'll be busier than ever, because the kids will just be running you wild on campus. Those kids.
Dude, the kids on campus are nuts. This is unlike anything I've ever dealt with before.
And they're all so beautiful. Every time I pick you up on campus, I'm like, everyone's so beautiful.
Austin
is so
full
pretty.
Of beautiful people. It's yeah. insane how beautiful Austin is. And it's money is what it is. Mm-hmm. But whatever.
Yeah. Well, you guys know how to find us. anchor.fm/ears-stamps. That has a link to all our social medias, a way you can support us directly. And that's also been the sponsor for us lately. That's how we're able to do the podcast. So shout out to Anchor. Another shout out for Ashley for doing all the post-production. Also, if you want to just find our Instagram and Twitter, you can go there directly at ears_stamps and then dogearsandtimestamps@gmail.com.
Yeah. Let us know about things.
Yeah. Let us know what
whatever
you think.
They may be.
Anything.
Anything at all. What's your favorite crane? Is it the crane from The Senate of the Crane, or the crane from the crane book we're about to read?
It's the 1,000th crane you've made from discipline, from doing origami.
Oh, okay. Because you're done at that point?
Yeah, everything you've gained to that point, the discipline.
Okay.
Did you see what I did there? How I reserved myself?
I'm Will Hedrick.
I'm Jordan Schaffer.
And this is Dog Ears and Timestamps.
The last one was just for us.